We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
That I said someone in the top 10 has cheated. And then people assumed that this was like, well, I said I would bet on that. Not that I have like definitive proof or anything, which I don't. And then people were like, well, the top 10 is this. So who is it? And a lot of people are starting to accuse me of cheating.
Welcome back, everybody, to another C-Squared episode. In today's episode, we will be talking about Tata Steel, some things that have happened since we last discussed on the channel, and many more other topics. Fabi, first of all, welcome back. Hey, how's it going? You are not in the U.S. anymore. Tell us a bit about your location. Don't give us too many details, but tell us a bit about your location.
Oh, I'm just in Germany. There's this, I guess, highly publicized event already called the GOAT Chess Challenge.
The GOAT.
which is, it's called a freestyle event, but it's basically like a Fischer random event. And the players are, I mean, it's a very strong event. Magnus is the highest rated player. Mm-hmm. He's playing. Ding, the world champion, is playing. And I'm playing. And then there are some of the young guys. Okay, from the not young guys, there's also Levon playing. And then from the young guys, there is Vincent Keimer. Let me make sure that I get this right. There is Noderbeck Abdizatarov, I think. Let me just
check. Aronian and Gukesh. Yes, you're correct about that.
Yeah.
And Ali Reza, you mentioned Ali Reza, right?
No, I didn't. But Ali Reza, let's not forget him. He's the number one of the young guys, although he's no longer a junior. By age, actually, he's not right. So number one junior would be Pragnanta, but he's not playing. Noderbeck is. He's the number one junior in the tournament. Gukesh, pretty much the same rating.
Yes.
Keimer, actually, they got pretty much besides Prague, they got the top three juniors and Ali Reza.
Yes, a lot of people are actually continuing their recent trip from Tata Steel. They're going to Germany. Ali Reza, Ding, Noderbeck, Gukesh, and of course joined by Vincent, yourself, Magnus, and Levon, more or less. So four players continuing from Tata Steel, four players coming rested, nice and rested. I think Magnus was on a recent vacation as well. He was posting about his sunny vacation. So, you know, everybody's taking their time at the beginning of the year to kind of recharge. You know, it's an interesting moment whenever you start a new year, whenever you finish a season, because I guess the end of the season is the World Rapid and Blitz, right? At the end of the year, that feels like, okay, this just finished the cycle, the 1 year cycle as a chess professional, and then you take the first couple of weeks off, unless you're playing Tata Steel. So this is the first time for you that you're not playing in a very long time, right?
Yeah, I think since I played 2020, 2021 I played, 2022 I played during COVID years. Mm-hmm. 2020 it actually wasn't during COVID because it was, well, I guess COVID was going on, but it hadn't been widespread yet, so we didn't mm-hmm. have to deal with that. And then 2023 I played. And yeah, so this is the first time. I didn't play in 2019, 2018, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. 2017 I played probably a tournament which no longer really exists, but was the main competitor for Tata at the time, called the Gibraltar Chess Festival. I think it was called Jib Telecom.
Yep,
that
yep.
was a sponsor.
Yep.
And now I think that it doesn't happen or is unlikely to happen in the future.
Yeah, that one lost its sponsors. Actually, it was a great tournament, especially you know, for like regular GMs, like 2600s, 2650s, and especially for female players, because I think the prices for female players were quite consistent.
They actually had an interesting system, which some people will not like some people will think is fine, which was that they had women's prizes and open prizes in the same tournament, but the women could win two prizes.
Yes, cumulatively.
So, yeah, you could accumulate. And usually, sorry, did I close
No,
my
no,
camera?
you're
Oh,
good. You're
okay,
good. I can
good.
still see you.
Yeah, I just like touched my phone the wrong way. So normally it's like you can win a prize and you can, let's say you get two prizes, they give you the higher prize, right? So let's say you win top woman and fourth place in the tournament, you get, let's say, the top woman prizes. Maybe it's more money, but there it would accumulate. And there was one year where Ho Yifan tied for first, and also, of course, naturally got the top woman prize because she tied for first in the overall event. I don't know who she tied with. It might have been Hikaru. I don't remember the details. It actually might have been Nigel as well, but she got basically both prizes, so it ended up being a pretty significant amount of money, which is good for her. But yeah, that was probably the best tournament for women in terms of prizes at the time. And now there are some other good events, like the Karen's Cup is a very high-paying closed event. And Norway Chess will have equal prizes for the open event and for the women's event, which are happening side by side. So, yeah, interesting. I guess we went a bit off topic there.
No, absolutely. And speaking of Tata Steel, actually, before we get into that, I think we did mention that, it's a long tournament. And I think we were discussing this in 2023 when I went to Tata Steel for the first time in, let's say, my life as a second. And we were discussing how much time you spent in Tata Steel over the last 15 years, over the last 15 or participations or so. And I think we got the point where we were getting close to a year. Like a full year for you of living in Tata Steel over the years.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know exactly, but for some players, like for Magnus or Vichy especially, I think they have probably spent well over a year. For me, of course, it's a bit less, but I played for the first time in 2008. I would have been 15 years old at the time, in what was called the C group. And at that time it was not called Tata. That wasn't the sponsor. The sponsor was it was also a steel company. I mean, Tata Group is like the big, really big corporation in India, but they have their own like Tata Steel company. And the one before Tata, it that sponsored the Vikings A tournament was called, well, I can't remember. Chorus, the Chorus Group.
Chorus, I remember that. Yes,
Yeah,
now
so
I
I think that was
remember.
actually a Dutch company, and they have had Vikenzee is known as the city in Netherlands where they have a lot of steel production. They have a big steel plant. And so yeah, 2008 was the first time, then 2009 second time B group, and 2010 was the third time because I won the C, thereby going to the B group, and the B I won the B group thereby qualifying me for the A group, and the A group, 2010. I think that Magnus was the winner, but I might be mistaken about that. And I didn't do very well, but for my rating, it was actually kind of expected what I did. So I was 17 years old at the time, probably about 26, 80, 70, 80, somewhere in there. And so I was an underdog, of course. And I think I scored minus three. Magnus was a bit older than me. He was already not number one in the world necessarily, but he was among the players who were fighting for number one. The players included Topalov, Anand, Kramnik, Aronian, those maybe a few others I can't exactly think of at the moment, but those maybe Morozevich, Ivanchuk. I think these were like the best players in 2010. I'm just curious. I'm going to check the rating list for January 2010.
The rating list of January 2010. But while you do that, we need to talk about what happened in Tata Steel because I have to say the last couple of rounds were absolutely insane, especially the last round was quite crazy. First of all, the final standings included four players tied at the top with 8.5 points. Those players were Abdusatarov, Gukesh, Anish, and Wei. But how they got to tie in the last round is kind of crazy. So Gukesh won against Parham with black. Okay, this absolutely can happen. Gukesh played a tremendous game. Wei completely demolished Vidit with white. And we'll talk about Wei in just a second. He's been having an absolutely fantastic year. Definitely showing his class. Nodirbek against Donchenko. We're sort of expecting, and I think we discussed this in the last podcast, we were expecting Nodirbek to have an easier route for the last couple of rounds. But a big one, the big one was in round 12, in fact. Anish, in the last couple of rounds. Last one won against Max Warmerdam. Sure, a player that was really struggling, completely blew him off the board. But in round 12, I mean, we need to talk about this one against Jordan. With black, he won in 20 moves, 21 moves, one move blunder. I mean, what was that? What did Jordan do when he played that move, queen to c3? In a completely innocuous position, I mean, pretty drawish, pretty equal looking, and then he plays queen c3, he loses on the spot. What happened there?
Yeah. Okay, so to start with, round 12 was absolutely insane. I mean, the whole end, maybe even the whole tournament, you could argue, was completely insane. Anish won very quickly. Like, basically, as soon as I checked the games in the morning, that game was over. Literally over. Not that he was winning, but it was literally over.
Yes.
And, queen c3, I mean, it's pretty simple. He thought queen c3, which I don't know how long he took, but I don't think it was very long. I think he probably played it quickly, which explains the blunder, and he probably only looked at a4, and then maybe he was looking at knight c5 after a4, maybe he was looking at queen c5 after a4. I'm not exactly sure, but he had something in mind after a4, which is not winning for black.
Queen c3 was played in 20 seconds, according to my stats.
He just missed the game. That's it. He probably thought that black's rooks are on the e-file and they're not moving. Queen c3 kind of attacks a pawn, not exactly, but sort of eyes the a5 pawn. If you don't see rook c8, then it makes sense. Of course, if you do see rook c8, then it loses. And I have to say, of course, you shouldn't, in a position like this where there's tactics, well, in general, in any position where you have 50 minutes and you can't possibly get to the heart of the position very quickly, you probably should spend a bit of time.
Yeah.
Here it's actually quite important because, you know, white is in tactical danger. I mean, black is threatening a4, and white needs to play rook to c4 to solve that threat, which you can figure out if you calculate, but if you don't calculate, you could easily not figure it out.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was that. Yeah, Anish won that game, very important for him. Like, more crazy things happened in that round. To start with, probably the craziest thing was that Gukesh was completely winning against Prague.
Ooh.
Like, completely winning.
Yes.
I mean,
yes, yes.
Basically, I saw the video. Like, yeah. Prague was looking like he's ready to resign. Even after bishop f4, I was watching the video. It looked for a second like he was, because white is kind of threatening to take on h6. Like, mm-hmm. He didn't see a way to stop it, and he was about to resign. And then he saw that queen f8 at least avoids immediate resignation. Then they repeated, and then they repeated again, and then they repeated a third time, and then it was declared a draw. And it's very clear from the video, Gukesh makes his last move, bishop d6, and gets up. So he's not trying to make a draw. It's like he reached move 40, and then he's thinking, okay, queen f7 will happen, and now I'll think with all the time in the world about how to finish this game off.
Yep.
Because white doesn't win by force. White needs to, you know, play some accurate moves, and there's a bunch of ways to win eventually, but you do need to work for it.
But the thing is that black doesn't actually have any threats. So you can make just a random move. You can play the move e4. You can go bishop to g3. You can make a time-passing move and just be completely winning, completely fine in the position. Bishop d6?
Sure.
Like, how do you even explain that decision? Did he forget that he already repeated twice? Was it just a moment of panic because he played it with 10 seconds on his clock? Like,
I mean, I don't think I need to explain it because I think from the video, it's very clear. Like, he makes his move, he gets up very calmly, like he just made move 40. And then he's about to, like, leave the board. Mm-hmm. And then he, like, makes a double take and comes back and looks at his score sheet. So it's, like, very clear. He just blundered that. It's a repetition. Yeah, he could have played instead of Bishop f4, for example. Rook e4 is a very good move because you want to induce Queen g6 and then trade queens on g4, and the end game is actually pretty probably pretty hopeless. Or maybe even after Queen g6, you could play Bishop g3. Maybe there's like a bunch of ways. But yeah, in general, it's clear that he just blundered the repetition of. It's still shocking that it happened because like normally players have a clear idea of where they are in terms of how many repetitions. Sometimes when you're playing blitz, it can be difficult, but like here, it's not. You have a 30-second increment. You kind of should have a more or less clear idea of how many times you've played this particular position. And also, Ali Reza. I mean, speaking of other things, Ali Reza beat Jan like basically from the opening, like just smashed him. Is the best way to put it in a Joe Baba London, which started from the move knight c3 first move.
Jan's reaction
I
to
actually
one
wasn't
knight
too
c3
surprised because
was quite funny, actually.
I had once like thought about this line, and the computer very much likes this approach by Black to play like bishop g4. And then if you start to check it, you realize that White gets the bishop pair, castles long, plays g4, and has a clear plan, and Black's play is not so clear cut. And so the computer kind of, if you're trusting it without analyzing very concretely, then it can actually mislead you.
It reminds me of Jan's game against Ding from the World Championship match from the rapid tiebreaks. I'm trying to remember exactly which line that was, but it felt it had the same echo. Something that the computer generally likes, and then suddenly, from a practical perspective, especially, in a rapid format, it's much more difficult to play for from a practical perspective for Black. Do you know
Yeah,
which game I'm talking about? I'm trying to
there was
remember
a
whether it
rapid
was the
tiebreak
exact
game.
same, it wasn't the exact variation.
No. That's what I can tell you. In the rapid tiebreaks, there was a game where Ding played move 3, c3, and then after c5, took on c5, and then
That's the
after
one.
e6, played bishop to e3 and tried to hold on to his pawn. But that was with short side castling both of them, and Ding got some advantage, and eventually it was a draw. Could have been like, it was actually the. Probably the best game by both players of the entire match. If we're speaking about that match, but okay, like from the type of position, I don't know if I see the similarities, but from the idea of like preparation to get your opponent in a kind of vague position where it's double-edged and the computer likes their position, it is a sort of modern approach. Makes a lot of sense. People are trying to do this, looking for kind of these non-concrete positions where both sides have a lot of possibilities, and maybe the computer gives a little bit too much of an edge for one side, and that would make people stop prematurely. Like they just say, "Okay, this is fine," and put some small analytical symbol to conclude the variation in our analysis, and we're done.
Complicated.
But of course, yeah, complicated, slightly better, or whatever. Which these things, which maybe aren't so helpful over the board. And then also, Vidit won a basically flawless game against Noderbeck. Close enough to flawless. I mean, nothing's flawless, but yeah, he won a really, really excellent game. Kind of basically what happened was he had some idea in a sort of Nimzo line, g3, which is interesting. And then Noderbeck didn't know the position and quickly got a bad position. And then it was actually a technical job, which he converted pretty much perfectly. I mean, you can maybe argue about some of his moves, but it's a really nice game.
Yeah, no, that was
And
really good by Vidit. Vidit, by the
then the
way,
last.
he's been having a tremendous year, yeah. I mean, really good play, really good quality of play, I would say, for Vidit. And he has been receiving a lot of praise for it, for good reason.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the best players in the world. I mean, now he's number 14 in the world. It's all very close, of course. It's all separated by, well, there was a thing, right? Vichy dropped out of India number one, and Prague got India number one, Vidit, and so on. Gukesh, like, they're all actually separated by 5 points.
Nobody could hold it
So,
for more than one day, basically, at one point. That India
yeah,
number
well,
one.
it's,
And it's still
I mean,
Anand,
great.
right? Right now it's Anand.
Yeah, but okay, first of all, Vichy, I don't think he cares very much. He also doesn't play at all, pretty much. I think that he is as close to retired as we can say. I mean, he probably has no reason to I mean, he's achieved everything that you could achieve, and he's also 54 years old. It's not like he needs to stay super active, and he has a family and so on. But
Well,
of course, this leads to having a rating which might not be indicative of your level in the world, right? We
yeah,
don't know
no.
what his level in the world is.
I think Vichy right now, he's thinking of himself as more or less, at least semi-retired, right? He enjoys doing commentary, he enjoys doing content. I think, at least from his posts, it feels like he's definitely enjoying seeing the rise of all these other Indian players. And I'm sure he supports and trains and mentors a lot of them. But also, he loves going to concerts. I don't know if you've seen his recent post when he sings alongside Sting, sorry. Quite an interesting one, I have to say. And then Vladimir responds, "Okay, boomer. Did you see that?"
I saw. Yeah, it was.
Amazing, amazing social media content, I have to say.
Yeah, I saw. No, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's a nice moment.
Very cool, very
So
cool.
okay, there's a lot of guys jockeying for top spot, or, well, we can say top spot in their country, or top spots in the world. It's all very, very close now, I have to say. From Ding 2762 to Gukesh, for example, 2743. That's actually 12 players. Wait, 13 players, I think. Yeah. 13 players, and they're separated by 19 points. So, 19 points can basically, between two players, can change within a tournament. One player can have a good one, other one has a bad one. For example, Ding and Giri are now equally rated, and they were 30 points, 31 points apart before Vikenzay, because Ding lost exactly 17.7 and Giri won 13.2. So you see how the gap bridges quite quickly, or can bridge quite quickly in a tournament.
Yeah, no,
And also,
absolutely.
speaking of some of the players' ratings, like Wei Yi is top 10 in the world now. He's 2754.8, 2755. So that makes him top 10. And also, it's probably his first time breaking into the top 10, I would guess.
It is for sure. I think his highest was something along the lines of top 20, maybe. Back the first time where he got around 2730, 2740, I think it was a long time ago, in fact, like 2016, 2015, 2016. It feels like a long time ago because he actually achieved that rating when he was only 16 years of age. Right now, he's only 24. For whatever reason, I always thought about Wei since because he's been going on for so long, because he's been in the spotlight for so long. I felt like he's much older than he is. He's only 24. I thought he's somewhere around 28. But he's super young.
Well, I think, yeah, he's been around for forever. So, and also because he hadn't achieved progress in many years, people assume that maybe, well, I mean, people have some recency bias in general, which is natural, we all do. And people assume that since he wasn't making progress, that maybe he wouldn't. But of course, he's 24 is not by any means old, and there's still a lot of
He's so young.
years or even decades that he could be playing chess at a high level. So it's always too early to make assumptions. That's why, I think in general, when we're making assumptions about a player that, okay, they had a bad event, they had a bad run, and now they're washed up, it's always too early. Like, you can only say that once, a player has reached the point where nobody really is able to progress anymore. When they're like, if a player is 45, then we probably assume that they're not going to be making huge progress, or if they're simply retired at some point. But outside of that, I would always assume players can continue to progress.
No,
So, like,
absolutely. And I thought that Ding, maybe a little bit of the spotlight was taken away from him because of, sorry, not Ding, Wei, because of Ding. They're both from China. Ding got all the spotlight, became the world champion, and Wei was not even playing that much. It felt like since COVID started, he barely played anything, which was the case for a lot of players, especially for Chinese players, but it felt much more pronounced, I guess, for Wei.
yeah, I think in general we do have to think about The spotlight, it's very, very transient to
It
start with.
is, yeah.
You say the spotlight was on Ding, but I wouldn't really say that that was the case until he qualified for the World Championship match and won the World Championship match. Since 2019, when he was, arguably, we could say top three in the world by rating and by results. And he won the Grand Chess Tour and so on. And then there was a period where I don't think that people were really thinking that Ding would be making some huge strides. In 2020, for example, 2021, he wasn't very active in the chess world. And then 2022, things all sort of aligned, right? And we've already talked about all the things that happened, Sergey being banned from the candidates and Ding taking the spot,
The whole
Magnus
butterfly effect.
withdrawing. Yeah, there was a huge effect of things happening. Who knows what, you change one small detail and everything changes. Like if Sergey plays the candidates, then again, who knows what changes. But yeah, Ding, and then he won the match, so he's the world champion. And of course, that takes the spotlight from the other Chinese players. But I think also the issue with the Chinese players is that I think they're taxed very heavily as athletes. And this doesn't really incentivize them to keep playing chess for a long time. So even when they're very strong, at some point they don't really play anymore. And I think that's because it's not as financially viable as, let's say, for an Indian player.
Yes.
Right.
Also, what I'm hearing is that they transition into a more of a mentorship role for the up and coming new players, and this is something that the system incentivizes, but also the government incentivizes. The government places them into these mentorship roles when they don't seem to be, let's say, fulfilling their full potential or have reached a peak. Have you heard about this system before as well?
I mean, you could see it from some of their players, like Li Qiao, for example, was 27, 30, maybe 27, 40. Wang Yu was one of the, I don't know if he was ever top 10, but he was certainly among the best players in the world. Maybe even top 10 at some point. I think he was around 27, 60 at his peak, maybe. I could be wrong.
Even Hui Fan.
Well, Huifan, was the world champion and like basically dominated women's chess, because she was by far the strongest and there was almost no competition. She was sort of like Judith, after Judith, right? And Judith completely dominated the field. She was by far the best player for decades, and then Huifan was also by far the best player after Judith's retirement. And now it's not so clear who's the best woman player in the world. But I don't know, of course, about all their personal situations, but it's clear that even though they're a lot of the Chinese players are very strong, they don't really stick to chess after a certain point. And I can give you more examples besides Wang Yu and Li Qiao. Even Wei, it seemed like that. And one of the players who's quite active, remains quite active, is Yuan Yi. But from other like really strong players who kind of dropped out a bit from chess, Wang Hao is another example. So there's definitely, and Wang Hao was also like 27, 60 at some point in his career. So a lot of these players are very, very strong. Were the best in the world, but they didn't seem to keep up with their professional career at some moment.
Yeah, and Wei, as we speak about him, obviously showed incredible performance in the tiebreaks as well. It felt like he was the more stable out of the four competitors. I believe defeated, if I'm not mistaken, Norderbeck in the first clash. Beautiful attack with the black pieces in the semifinals, in the other semifinal. Anish actually took the lead against Gukesh, dropped the lead, and then was defeated in the third and decisive match in, let's say, the Armageddon. So Gukesh and Wei advanced to the finals, and then the finals was absolutely brilliant, I have to say. And Wei really played amazing chess, really good chess, very stable, and very, very efficient in time travel. I think this is the right word, because he made it practically very difficult from a practical perspective for Gukesh to handle. What was your take on, let's say, the grand finals, the tie breaks?
No, I thought that Norderbeck was a favorite in this whole thing. I thought he would have been a favorite against Wei Yi in their match. And at some point, like this was before it started, and at some point I was like, okay, yeah, he's winning this first game with Black. I even stopped watching. Because if you look at the position, like, I don't know, after Queen C4, I mean, on move 47,
First game
Black is,
between Norderbek and Wei.
Black is just promoting pawns and even had a time advantage. And Wei Yi tried this one last trick. Rook e1, c1, queen, rook c1, and somehow it worked. I don't know what Norderbeck missed because after queen c1, queen e6, you can't escape. And it kind of looks like you can't escape the checks. Queen e6, and you can't run anywhere. But there's queen e2. Maybe he just didn't see that queen e2 is a move at all. Because after queen e2, your queen could suddenly cover checks on the e-file. And like, even if you don't know if queen e2 is winning, then you kind of see queen c1 as a draw, and queen e2 can't be worse for Black. I mean, there's no way that it's a. Like it can only be potentially better than Queen C1, or it's the same. Like they're both a draw. If like because let's say you have 2 seconds to decide, you can't evaluate everything, but you can see that Queen E2 is a better chance, right? But maybe he just missed Queen E2 entirely, or just panic 100 seconds. It can happen, and then that was a draw, and then Wei Yi won the second game, which was quite a nice game, I have to say overall. I mean. It was, it's blitz, right? It's a bit up and down, but quite a nice game from Black. And then the final, it was looked pretty smooth. I didn't, well, let's see. I guess, yeah, he was in some danger in the first game. Wei Yi, that is. It didn't feel like enormous danger, but it could have been quite dangerous. There was some moment, but okay, it was like one move chance that basically White had. It was to play Rook C5 instead of Rook E6. And but overall, yeah, in the second game, I think that he just had control, like against Gukesh totally. There was never really a chance for Black to, like, maybe Black was equal at some point, but that's about it. And okay, actually, the opening went kind of okay for Black, but yeah, it was equal, and then he kind of slowly outplayed him from an equal position. Yeah, overall, you have to say he scored 4.5 out of the last 5 games. He won 2 tiebreaks. It's hard to conclude anything than he was very deserving.
No, absolutely. Showed great nerves, but also, Tata Steel was a tournament of many stories, and I have to say, very impressed with the youngsters. I mean, Prague, Norderbeck, Gukesh, all of them extremely, extremely impressive. Obviously, Anish tying for the second year in a row, for first place, very impressive as well. So, a very intriguing tournament. How would you assess it from a candidate opponent's perspective?
I don't put any weight into it because it's too far away. It's just different circumstances. Like we know that the guys like Gukesh, Vidit, they're strong, they're dangerous. But Jan had a bad tournament. Okay, I don't put much weight into it for candidates. And yeah, it doesn't say so much, I think. And I can give examples from the past to back this up, like Sergey winning candidates after a horrendous 2016 Vikings A. I won candidates after a horrendous 2018 Vikings A. Jan won 2022 candidates after a horrendous Bucharest tournament 2022. So on and so forth. I mean, a million
And Ding
examples.
won the World
2020,
Championship
I went.
match after a horrendous Vikings A.
Yeah. And also 2020, I won Vikings A with +7. One of probably the highest results in I can say history, and I didn't win candidates. I got 50% in the first half. Like, again, these are different tournaments, and we're not going to put. I don't think we should be putting so much weight into one hand event, even though it shows that guys like Wei Yi or Gukesh they can of course win these events.
No, absolutely.
By the way, I found the rating list from January 2010. Carlson was number one by 5 points. Depaul was number two, 2805. Anand number three, Kramnik four, Aronian, Gelfand, Gashimov. I forgot about Bugar, who tragically passed away at a young age. Ivanchuk number eight, and Wang Yu number nine with 2749. So that answers our question. And Sviedler number 10. Morozevic, who I for some reason thought was like 2780, was actually 2732 at the time. Maybe he had lost some rating.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Very interesting always to look back
I was number
to these
51 in the world.
memories. 51?
I was number 51 in the world in 2010.
Really? Wow. That far, huh? I had the impression that
Oh,
you were top 10 for sure in 2010,
from 2010.
but I
No, I
guess
was.
not. How old were
I
you in
became top 10.
2010? You were like, what, 17?
Yeah, I was 17 in
17,
January.
18? Something like that.
No, I became top 10 in 2012.
Okay.
Was my first time. I became top five around that time, like 2770, I think. That was around top five.
Yeah. Speaking of
2012.
GMs, young prodigies, the US has another very young prodigy. We, in fact, talked about it with Hikaru in one of our first episodes last year. Actually, a couple of years ago in September, I think just after Ultimate Moves and the Single Cup. I don't remember
Yeah,
exactly which
one of
one.
our first interviews with Hikaru.
We talked
Probably our
about
most watched video, I think, at this point.
it definitely is. Andy Woodward just became a GM today. So kudos to him. Congratulations. Congratulations to actually his supporters, Hikaru being one of them. We have heard in recent times that he is actually supporting his career financially, probably paid for, some of his coaches. I think one of them was Yaroslav Zerebuch. He posted on more or less a retired GM, Ukrainian in origins, came, did his studies in the United States, and right now he's working, I think, in finance somewhere in Chicago. But I'm digressing. Basically, Hikaru has been mentoring and supporting him financially for a while now, and he's been pulling some very good results. I've seen him in Mexico. I've spent some time, not necessarily spent some time with him, but we exchanged some words. I exchanged some words with his parents, with his dad, as well. And they definitely, all of them as a family, seem very motivated. But also, his dad is not heavily putting a lot of pressure on him. It feels like this is an internal thing that comes from Andy. He really wants to do well. He's really passionate about chess, and I think this is extremely important in general, for the longevity of youngsters, not to have, that reoccurring pressure all the time from your close circle. So definitely, I would say a pretty brilliant future ahead for Andy Woodward and for American chess as a whole. I mean, having another youngest GM right now, I think he is the youngest GM in the world. Obviously, Mishra became historically the youngest GM in the world. We've talked with him, I believe, last year. But basically, US chess, bright future ahead. What's your take on it?
To be honest, I don't know the kid so well. Of course, I've heard the name. I mean, it's clear that, like, he mentioned World Juniors. I think he beat Hans there, right?
He did.
So he's definitely very strong. But I'm not too familiar with him. I never played him, as far as I know. I did notice that probably the first time I saw the name was when was the last? Probably it was 2022, the last Fischer Random World Championship. Because I saw the bracket of the online event for and there was Hikaru was playing, and his bracket, one of his first opponents was Andy Woodward. And I never, I think, heard the name before. But then he, I mean, the kid was already putting up a tough fight against Hikaru in Fischer Random. And yeah, I mean, he'll, of course, it's hard to say to make predictions about someone's progress when they're still very young, but he's probably one of those kids who will quickly become like 2600. And I guess in general, the sky's the limit, although you never know, right? So he'll have to work very hard. It's the same with Mishra and a lot of these other young talents that they have to work very hard and stick with it for a long time. But then, of course, they have very good chances to become a top level player. Although the competition is pretty stiff as well. It's
Speaking of competition, in the same tournament, this 12-year-old international master from Turkey, Yagiz Khan Erdogmus, international master, 25-24, earns his first, I think it's his first, GM norm at only 12 years of age. And he wins the tournament, 6.5, alongside some really, really strong opposition. Murzin, Sadwani, Woodward, Simon Jakub from Poland, who I believe is the reigning under 16 world champion. Buddy Pronov, Klimkowski, and already some players that I don't necessarily know exactly. And Faustino Oro in last position. This is the 9-year-old. It's ridiculous. I cannot believe I'm saying he's 9 years of age and he's playing at the 2400 level. Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure he is. Maybe 8, I don't know. Faustino, let's see.
8, yeah.
Wait, is he really 8? No.
8, no, that sounds too young. He's born 2013. No, he's turning 11 this year.
Okay, so he's 10, wow.
Yeah, no, I've heard the name for a while. I mean, he's like 2357. Yeah, he's probably 10, I assume. I don't know his birth date, but which obviously is still kind of incredible. Yeah. 2357 at 10. And yeah, our Dogmas also, like, he's 2524. So yeah, also his graph, if you look at it, is pretty much straight up. So all these kids, this is like the generation of players that at some point Prague and Abdustarb and Gukesh will have to face, right?
Yeah.
But not for the moment.
Yeah. No.
We'll see someday. But yeah, they're very good. It'll probably by the time they're 18, they could be easily 2,700 plus players without any surprise there if they get to that point.
Yeah. Fabi, we're gonna keep it short today.
By the way, I just want to mention one other thing. Well, we didn't talk about cheating at all, and I'm probably going to keep it that way because I don't really feel like talking about it. But I do feel the need to mention this, just because like a quote of mine got taken out of context, or it's not even that it got taken out of context. It's just that people, well, it was like kind of stated, and then people put their own context into it. It was on the Levitov chess interview. And I promise this is like the last time I'm going to be talking about cheating for a while. But I just wanted to clear the record again, because like they said that I said someone in the top 10 has cheated. And then people assumed that this was like, well, I said I would bet on that. Not that I have like definitive proof or anything, which I don't. And then people were like, well, the top 10 is this, so who is it? And a lot of people are starting to accuse me of cheating. They're like, well, is he talking about himself? So I just want to clear the record up.
That would be some Machiavellian shit right there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I understand that most of it is trolling. I mean, I get that. But I was pretty clear in stating that I did not mean the top 10 now. I meant in general. And also, I don't have evidence of it. And people say, well, okay, if you have no evidence, then don't say anything. But I mean, I feel like it's sort of important for our sport. I don't really feel like talking about it anymore in the future because it's, you know, I don't have anything to gain, right? I get attacked and for no real reason. And also people say, like, why don't you handle it internally? But of course I do also handle it internally. But I feel like very often that doesn't lead to some sort of desired result. But I will say just this, that if in general you have Magnus saying like it's an existential threat a few days ago, and then I'm saying it's a problem, and Maxime is saying it's a problem, and I won't get into Kremnik because obviously people are not maybe taking him too seriously at this point, but he also says it's a problem, and even Hikaru at some point has also said it's a serious problem, even though maybe at the moment he's not delving into it too much, which I also understand that position's like, okay, well, you know, it's not helpful and it's probably just distracting and leads to a lot of hate that you get, which is not fun either. So that's why I'm not, but I am speaking honestly. So I'm speaking from my heart, and a lot of players and people, not just players, like people also who are behind, let's say, the anti-cheating general or organizations actually think it's also a serious issue. So that's all I'll say, that I'm kind of speaking from the heart, and also clarify that I wasn't talking about the current top 10 in general, and my opinion is one that's shared by many, including official people. So it's not like I'm also just saying some crap. It's there's some basis to things. Anyway, that's all I'll say.
No, that's a great position, and I think probably a good place to conclude our episode for today. I'm sure we'll touch on many other subjects in the next one, but I think we both are kind of on the run right now. So we'll keep it short. We'll rekindle our discussion later on in the week, maybe. By the way, when are you starting the GM GOAT challenge?
That's starting the 8th.
Perfect.
But
Okay.
I'm doing something before that, which I won't. I'm not going to say what it is because I actually don't really know what it is. I agreed to do something with a bunch of other chess players, and I don't really know the details behind it. So maybe I should have clarified more details. But
Probably
I
should
traveled to
have.
Germany early, and it's a chess thing. So I'm meeting some of the other guys. Levon is also coming, and I hope it's fun. But I don't know the details, so I don't know what it's going to be. It's kind of going to be a surprise. It starts on the 2nd. We'll see. And there's also the Champions Festival, I just mentioned, big online event coming up on the 3rd,
Tomorrow,
tomorrow. We'll
tomorrow,
record. Yeah.
yes, tomorrow the 30th. Right now we're recording this, the
31st.
31st. We're recording it on the 30th. 31st is when the Champions Tour starts, and it lasts for like a full week, in between the brackets, in between the matches, and so on and so forth. So, looking forward to that. I might play as well. We'll see. Anyway, Fabi, you have a good week. You guys watching us have a great week ahead. Don't forget, like, subscribe, and all
Wait,
the good stuff.
I have a good week and they have a great week. Is that that's how it is?
We'll leave it at
That's
that.
fair.
Yes, that is actually fair. You don't need a great week. You only need a good one.
I think it should be the other way around. But anyway, we'll leave it at that. Have a good week, everyone.
Have a great week, everyone. See you guys. Bye bye.